Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat-treating ovens available. Find your next oven at evenheat-kiln.com. To the chopper!
Welcome to a very special episode of Knife Talk. We're back after a couple of weeks off, and it's our 100th show. So join me, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and Mareko Momassi of Momassi Fire Arts for a Monday morning celebration.
Woohoo!
Jesus Christmas.
That'll do.
Oh my God.
That'll do.
Oh my God!
That was my best radio voice too, and I hit the time.
You did a good job.
I'm very happy.
The
with
woohoo,
that.
The woohoo is a little bit tepid.
Oh, we can
but
do.
Other
we can
than
do
that.
We can
no,
just do woohoos,
woo-hoo.
Whatever you like. It's fine.
Craig,
yes.
What the hell happened?
Oh, I've had the worst. They say things come in threes.
Okay.
So first of all, the computer just decided to blow up, fizzing and smoking, and terrible. I had a problem with an order, and I've had to redo the order, but we won't go into that too much. But basically, it's just set me back a few weeks. We also had a planned trip to the UK, which we did, and we all managed to get the shits on this trip. So,
oh, no!
Started Yikes. With the babies, and they were being sick, too. Then Amy got it, then myself. Then we passed it through all of the family.
Oh, wow.
It was the worst trip ever. We just spent the time in bed and not sleeping. It was terrible.
I'm back.
I said things come in threes, so I picked myself up, and I've had a really good couple of days, really positive couple of days. So, yeah, it's all looking good. What about yourself?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned your problems. I was going to end off the 2 weeks saying I went to the city with my wife and daughter, and we just walked into a Thai food restaurant to have some Thai food. And I got some, it was super cold in New York, and I got some very hot Thai soup, but not spicy hot, like put in the microwave too long hot.
Ah, right, yeah.
And I tell you what, I got back in the car, and we were driving back, and like every time I would turn, my guts would kind of like move around like there's a big water balloon in my guts. And then this morning and then I hope you do this the whole episode, please. And then this morning I woke up with the gurgle. So if I have to run out, I might have to run out at some point in this conversation. I'm at a point where I cannot trust a fart.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
We'll have a poop update later. Oh Jesus.
Well,
the thought of that. Oh. So, Mareko, what's your last 2 weeks been like?
Oh, man. So, Blade Show happened over in Portland.
Oh, yes.
That was a lot of fun. I'm a big fat loser. I lost the cutting competition to Murray Carter. It was cool, though. Doing it was cool. The venue, like kind of the after party venue, was a really neat spot they got a hold of. It was like a kickboxing gym or something like that, that they, I guess they rent out in the evenings when they're not training or whatever. But it was cool because the venue really wasn't that far. And Portland has all these electronic scooters like all over the place. And people were racing around from Blade Show down to this venue to go check it out. But the cutting competition, like I said, was a lot of fun. I think there's definitely room for growth. And kind of to refine the competition a bit. But as it goes for a first year, it was really great.
What was the competition, though? Like, what did everybody have
so
to do?
They had the chef's bracket and the maker's bracket, like I had been talking about. And they had The make or they had the competitors. The first round was cutting an onion in half, but at the equator, which was kind of odd because unless you're cutting onion rings, you basically never cut the onion at the equator of the onion. And so,
you mean not through the root?
Yeah,
not the
top,
root, the
other not, you know, top to root. You're cutting it, yeah, at the equator. And so split it in half at the equator. And then with the first half, you had to cut rings, but you had to cut them at a consistent thickness. And I think this was to kind of test, kind of whether like the steerage of your knife, if you ground it like 50-50, it's going to cut pretty damn straight. But if there's any issues with, or kind of funkiness with the geometry, and even if there is a kind of funkiness with the geometry, it's more about your control. Can you cut even rings off of the onion? So you had to cut 5 onion rings off, and then they measured it for consistency of thickness. And then, the other half you had dice, and that again was more about consistency. And then the next one was like julienning a zucchini, and julienne is just like thin slices or zucchini. little matchstick kind of cuts.
That's a strange vegetable to do that.
It
with,
is
you know?
Because you wouldn't
because the seed the inside's so much softer
absolutely.
Than the outside.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, it's not
so weird.
It's not a vegetable that you would usually do that with. You'd usually do that with like carrots or something like that.
Like a carrot or a potato. Yeah. Right.
And then let's see. And then they had you do, they had chives, and the goal with the chives, that was the final round, was to cut them as evenly, like, again, it was about consistency. And so cut the finest little rings that were the most consistent in thickness.
Right.
It was interesting though, because so Murray Carter won, but he also had like 3 or 4 of his employees also competing. So even if he didn't win, he had a chance for the Carter name to take home the win. He kind of.
What was the
prize?
So
for the makers, it was a $500 cash prize for professional photographs and a custom made apron, custom embroidered apron.
Oh, that's nice.
From a company in Minneapolis. I cannot think of the name off the top of my head right now. And then the chef won a knife by our friend Mr. Fingal Ferguson. Super cool. Coulter Living Good won that knife. I got to see the knife and hold it and look at it. He does really good work. I like that knife. And
so yeah. I have a question, and this might be controversial. I like Coulter very much.
Yes.
He's a good dude. Should he be banned from the next one? Because he's kind of a ringer. Kind of a professional. He's like an ultra professional. I mean, that's what he does.
Yeah, so he competed on the chef side, though, with other cooks, professional cooks and chefs.
Okay. All right, Coulter, don't worry. I'm not going to put a ban. I'm not going to suggest that.
I think you did a good job.
So did you come second?
I got second place.
That's good.
That's great. That's not losing.
Yeah, it's first.
Unless
it's first
boxing,
winner,
of course.
Or first loser. Sorry. No.
All right.
Come on, man. No, it was a lot of fun. And
God bless you. I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done
it. You would have been great.
Thing.
It was.
I wouldn't have done it. Well, great or not, I wouldn't have done it. I'm not stand up there and cut onion rings. I don't make onion rings.
But it was cool because they had all kinds of beer flowing, and they had food trucks out like right outside the door, like 30 feet away. It was really cool.
What's happened since Blade? What have you been up to?
After I got back from Blade, so I finished that Tonto before I went to Blade. Like I finished it the day before I went to Blade and got that out in the mail. I went back to working on the small batch, the Smith & Bard small batch collection, and I got those all finished out. And we just sold those, and the response was awesome. You know, it's nerve-wracking. This is very new for me to do a small batch kind of like that and put it out there, and who knows what the response is going to be like. And it was very positive, and so We look forward to definitely doing more of those in the future. And and since then, I have started another knife. I've been posting about it kind of on my stories and in my feed. And it sucks when you're doing foraging and you underestimate the amount of material you need. And I ended up forging this blade and I was like, crap, I don't think there's enough there. And I keep stretching it and stretching it. And I finally get the shape and size I need. But it's pretty damn close to the finished proportions. And by the time I was done finished grinding it and got below, you know, the forge scale and any kind of decarb that resulted from the forging, it was too thin. It's so flexible right now. It's like a fillet knife. And so it's, you know, it's not going to work for this build. And so I'm working on, I started making some new Damascus for it. You know, but I'm sure there's somebody out there who's going to love a super flexible chef's knife because they have the control or they cut a lot of fish or I don't know what, but it just ain't going to happen for this one. So nothing like starting over after 3 days of work.
Woohoo. All right. Well, you know, these things happen. Yeah. What can you do?
Shall we see what's been going on in the world?
Sure.
This is KTP News. This is our section where we talk about news coming up and things happening and kind of some silly stuff going on with knife-making kind of stuff in the world. I don't know who. Apparently, our guy Rick Hall, Rick Hall Knives on Instagram, is going to be his episode of Forged in Fire. He was.
He was already on. This is notes for. This is news for.
This is old news.
I wish I caught this earlier.
I totally missed that.
I just realized it. So, congratulations, Rick Hall. You're our buddy. Yeah. Congratulations on being on Forge and Fire. Great job.
Nice.
There you go.
Tell us about your friends, Jeff. I know they've got a Kickstarter going, haven't they, for a makerspace run by you?
Yeah, there's my buddy Connor McGinnis is a potter. In the Westchester area, he's been making beautiful pottery. He's done pottery for Stone Barns. I know he's done pottery for really, really nice restaurants. And he's a really exceptional guy. And he's teamed up with a guy we know. His name is Yazzle Knives. And they started a maker space in Tarrytown, not too far from me, called Maker Central New York. That's at Maker Central New York. And they're doing a Kickstarter. They got a great video and they're trying to raise some money so they can make it a space that people can be in. And I'm not 100% sure if it's going to be for people to come in and work themselves, but it's a great maker space. These are great guys. They're very talented and it's very culinary oriented. So go follow Maker Central New York. Go watch their Kickstarter. I donated because their video is very good. Mm. Their video was funny. They did a good job. At one point, Connor's sitting on the toilet talking about sheetrock. It's very clever. If for anything else, it's clever and support them. So Maker Central New York, Yazzle Knives, a good dude, makes real nice forge knives and Damascus and that's for them.
Yeah, it's a very good video. It's quite funny. It's good to see.
Yeah, so give them a support.
Anything coming up in the calendar at all, Marek?
I don't have a calendar on me right in front of me, so I don't know.
Wait there. You got one. Here. Let's have a look. This is completely live. What's today's date? Today is the... Okay, so today there is something happening in Lyon in France, which is the Salon de Couteau. That's it until next Friday. So on Friday the 22nd, there's the New York Custom Knife Show, and that's in Jersey City.
16th.
And that's next Friday the 22nd, going on to the 23rd, which is Saturday.
Mm. There you go.
There we go. What have we got in the news that's a little bit different this week? Our silly news.
Well, this wasn't so silly. This was actually a couple of weeks ago, but no one really talked, really touched upon it in the knife world, I guess. But, Anthony Bourdain killed himself very sadly a number of years ago. A number of years ago?
It was about a year ago, I think, wasn't it?
A little bit over a year ago.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very tragic thing, especially in the culinary world. He was an incredible personality, you know, you understand.
Yeah.
He also had a Bob Kramer knife that they put up for auction. So this is something that's kind of flowing around, and I'm just going to read what the Esquire article says. Anthony Bourdain, legendary knife, an auction, and a love story. As his meteorite chef knife sits for auction along 200 of his other possessions, his friends and family reflect on this its lasting magic. Anthony Bourdain was enraptured with his knife. It was crafted by him in 2016 by Bob Kramer, a rock star of knife making, as Bourdain, a rock star in his own right, called him, and it was influenced by samurai swordsmithing and the literal stars. The iron used to form it was harvested from meteorites. There was mythology surrounding the knife. At the time, the current bid was $50,000, but we all know that it went for more than that.
Yeah. So Morocco sent me the link whilst it was still live, so I kept refreshing this link, and my God, it was climbing and climbing.
Yeah.
So it eventually went for $231,000.
That's a lot of money.
And
that's a lot of money.
Where's that money going? Is that going to his estate, to his family? Does anybody know?
I would imagine. Hmm. I mean, that's his. I mean, his knife.
That's a lot of money. Yeah, so this estate auction was to help raise money, to help support behind, as well as to a new scholarship fund for the CIA, which he is an alum of. And so they got a new scholarship fund for in the honor of Anthony Bourdain, and some of that money went to that.
Yeah, that's good.
To help support upcoming chefs.
That's excellent.
I wonder who the buyer was. It's a whole lot of money.
That's you know, it's also, it's great. You know, God bless him. God bless him. it's an incredible amount of money. It is an incredible amount of money.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Bob's stuff is always auctioned for, you know, exceptional money. And it's always, to me, it's really inspiring to see, not that I think that any of my work is ever going to sell for that kind of money, but just to see where the possibility lies in what things can sell for. But obviously, Anthony is a big part of that story and a big part of why that sold for so much.
There's a lot more around it. I mean, it's the, you for know, sure. I think when you look at auctions like this, it's also very speculative in terms of what people are willing, you know, some people are willing to pay more than others. So it's like, you know, it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing for the family too. And it's great for the family too. And I know that, you know, he had a lot of, you know, he had a lot of irons in the fire, so to speak, because, I mean, with his TV shows were always very well respected. And, you know, I know that he was going to do that. He was going to have some marketplace, hawker market in New York City that just kind of fell through. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he was a very, very successful writer and TV personality, and the fact that, you know, his family's, you know, there's a lot left on the table when he went. So it's good to see the people that hopefully that his family's, you know, taken care of to a certain degree.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, it ain't gonna cover the loss of their father, but at the same time, it's like,
right.
Yeah.
There we are.
Shall we move on?
Combat Abrasives make the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size and at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with the promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
Do it now! 15% KNIFETALK15 at Combat Abrasives. We all use their belts. They're the go-tos.
Yahoo!
Oh, yeah.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Let's take a deep dive.
There she is.
I think Morocco sent us a question this week.
Yeah, so this is something, you know, I have mistakes and setbacks all the time in my knife making. And in my question, I said, how do you cope with failure? But it could also be with, you know, these kind of shortcomings, these setbacks, these mistakes that happen, because it very much is a part, especially for me, of the custom, it just comes with the territory of doing custom work or any kind of handcrafted work. Is just that you know, mistakes happen, stuff happens. But sometimes I just go with it and I'm just like, well, shit happens. And sometimes it really messes me up and stresses me out. And so I was curious to see, you know, how you guys, you know, how do you experience that kind of, those kind of mistakes and shortcomings?
I'm the worst. I'm the worst. When something bad happens, that's it. It's the end of the world, and I'm terrible. So, I mean, I used to just try and work through it, but you quite often you're in a mood, and yeah, you're just going to make more mistakes. So, I'll quite often just finish for the day and just say, "I'm going to write this day off, wake up with a better attitude in the next day." Yeah, I'm just not very good at it. I mean, thankfully, my wife is, you know, she's very encouraging and all the rest of it. And she sort of, you know, says, well, you know, things happen. And, you know, if you're going to do something different, you've got to expect that things will happen. But yeah, it hits me quite hard. So quite often I'll just walk away from it, do something different. I've got a million and one hobbies, so I've always got something I can be doing anyway. But yeah, sure. Just come back to it with a fresh head. That's the only way for me. Otherwise, I just find myself getting further and further down this rabbit hole and making more stupid mistakes. It's not good for me.
Sure.
But it's not just you, or it's not just you. Mm. It's everyone always feels that way. It's that whole idea of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
It's to do with everything. You know, I think that what it comes down to is when you feel failure, one of the things in a positive note in regards to that, and you feel you've seen a setback and you made this decision, is you have the inner fortitude to take responsibility for your actions. And I think that that's much more valiant than blaming other people or other machines or the things or whatever, or not taking responsibility. So when you feel like you've made a mistake, or you internalize it in a way that you're just like, I suck at this. I had that recently. I'm like, I've made a pile of things, and then all of a sudden I do one thing. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And then it takes a while. I walk around a little bit, and I'm like stressed out, and I'm just like, what am I doing? And what else is going to happen? And it's how you deal with it. But really the issue is you become too hard on yourself, because you're taking responsibility for your actions, and that's the sign of a positive human being.
Mm-hmm. I just blame the machines.
What if you?
I blame the machines.
Well, see,
fucking drill press, kicking it.
Yeah, if you blame other things, if you don't take that is ultimately one of the biggest problems with people in general, is they don't take responsibility for their actions, and they don't own the responsibility that they made a mistake. Okay, it's how you deal with it. Mm. It's the worst. It's terrible. You feel like you're a complete garbage, but the good thing is, at least you give a shit. You know, at least you're not like, you know, a sociopath who blames other things or other people. Hmm. So, you know, shining star. I'm terrible. I like want to like, I want to throw things. I'm the worst. I feel like human garbage. I feel like human garbage. And it takes me a while to kind of like get past it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think another good thing is that we've got this community there. So, I mean, just the week before last, I was hitting my head against the wall with something, and it's just like every time it just wasn't working, and I ruined two knives on the way through it, and I was just thinking, well, what the hell am I? I'm missing a step here. What am I doing wrong? Just not thinking straight. And I ended up talking to, well, funny enough, it was Fingal. We mentioned Fingal earlier. And he explained, and I was like, oh yeah, I've missed out that step. You know, what was I thinking? And everything went plain sailing from then. So as much as, you know, generally most of us probably work alone in the shop, or we may have, you know, two or three sort of shop mates or whatever. Sometimes you think if something goes wrong, that's, you know, the complete end of the world. And what the hell am I, there's no way out of this. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of people out there who can help, and we'll give advice. And sometimes just somebody to chat with and say, what am I doing wrong here? You know, is there any way I could do this better or someone? Most people are more than likely going to help you.
Yeah.
And then when dealing with your customers, they appreciate the fact that it's how you take care of your customers too. Hmm. Like I've had problems where something didn't go right. I'm looking at these six, I had to rehandle a knife four times because the wood was too bright and the epoxy was coming through, and it just looked like shit. And I said to the guy every time, I'm like, I'm fucking pissed. I'm redoing this and I'm sorry, but I can't send this to you. And he appreciated the fact that I cared, that I was going to fix the situation. That's really what it comes down to. It's always how you deal with the failure. It's never about like, all right, so you fucked up. All right, so on the next one, you're going to try not to fuck up. You know, and I think that it's ultimately about how you kind of go about keep on going. There's an old AA expression, if you hit yourself in the head with a hammer and you keep doing it and you expect a different result, then that's the definition of insanity. And I think that that's true. If you can adapt to the problems, you can ultimately, you know, take them away. But it sucks.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Yeah. Self-doubt's the worst.
And I mean, you could reframe it, couldn't you? You couldn't say, you know, what have I done here that's failed? You could say, what have I done here I can learn from? And, you know, how can I prevent this from happening again? So you've learned something. So it's not a complete and utter write-off. You know what you did wrong, and, you try not to do that again. So, that you know, you could try and reframe it in your head, but that's just a way of thinking, I suppose. And whether you're that kind of person or not, it's going to be different for everybody.
And ultimately, it means that you care.
Hmm.
You care. That's huge. If you care and you decide, all right, well, I fucked this one up, it's because you care. And that is a giant positive. But it doesn't feel like a positive. All right, deep dive. There you go. Woohoo! I hope I don't shit myself. Not trusting a fart. That'll be a failure.
Oh, Jesus.
Or on this podcast, it might not be a failure. If I poop myself in this podcast, that might not be a failure.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right.
Oh, we got a phone call.
All right.
Hello?
Good morning.
Hi.
This is Neil Kamimura. My question is for my two favorite buddies in the whole world. How do you deal with Craig's jingles and bad impressions so early in the morning? No. Actually, my real question is, why the chef knife? Both of you guys, you know, I know you guys cook, but why only focus on the chef knife? Is there a passion? Is there a love? Is there a deeper meaning to why only the chef knife? Have a good day.
Okay. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get the joke.
He was saying, how do you deal with the jingles in the morning?
He's ball busted.
Oh,
Yeah.
Yeah. He thinks there's only two of us in this podcast, too.
I think so, yes.
faithful listener, Yuki Nomura, he's my man.
So why chef knives? He's asking the two of you. Why chef knives?
I think it's a question for all of us. I mean, I know why. I do chef's knives because it's what I know. I mean, I have my background cooking in restaurants, as well as, you know, getting my start working for Bob Kramer. And realistically, like I like it as a tool. I mean, it's used to make food. I mean, what better thing is there than that? And I love the kind of like the ethos of it bringing people together, you know, the idea of meals bringing people together. And I've had so many memories of working, like cooking in friends' kitchens or in my own kitchen with other friends around, you know, drinking a glass of wine or a beer and chopping some shit up and making some delicious food and sharing laughs and stuff. And that's all positive stuff to me. And I like the idea that I'm making tools that help create those kind of experiences for other people as well.
Couldn't even add to that perfect answer. I mean, look, oh, you're a cook and you like to make something that people can cook food with. It's great.
Hmm.
But I couldn't possibly add to a perfect answer.
There we go. I think from my point of view, not that anybody cares.
I care.
Well, he didn't ask me.
Didn't ask me. But I mean, I'm not into hunting, you know, it's not something I do. It's, you know, I don't have, you know, a big sort of EDC collection. I don't carry a knife with me all day, every day. But what I do, like you guys, I cook and I love cooking. I mean, even going back to the UK last week, I was, you know, what could have been a holiday, I was cooking for everybody every day. And that's what I love to do. I love to feed people and bring people together. And then when deciding to make knives, I think it was the obvious choice, a chef knife and, you know, culinary knives, because that's what I use. That's what I love doing. And it's, yeah, pretty much the same answer as you guys, really.
Well, I guess we know why all your family got sick.
Yeah, it was those shitty knives I had to use back in the
day. Red-handed, you fucker! You got red-handed, you got them all sick! You don't wash your hands good enough.
Oh, we got another phone call.
Hello?
Hey, guys. This is your friend Tomer from FKK in Barcelona. I don't really have a question, but I wanted to congratulate you on your 100th episode. You do a great job. I listen to it every week, and I learn something every time. And it keeps me entertained during work on Mondays. I just want to thank you for your friendship, support, and advice over the years. And I'm looking forward to the next 100 episodes and hopefully getting together a bit more often. Besos.
I think Tomo was in a wind tunnel then.
So
good dude. Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, good dude, man.
So no question from Tomo. He just wanted to wish us congratulations on our 100 episode.
What a good dude. What a good dude. Love that.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, another one.
Jeez.
Oh, hello?
Hey, gentlemen. This is Ashley Child. AC. That's all my homies like to call me. What is your favorite part about being a knife maker? Is it the mentors who you've worked with and taught you, the start of the knife, the finishing of the knife and its completion, and handing it over to the customer? Is it the money? Is it the food that it cuts? What about this craft makes you feel most alive? What about it fulfills your human purpose? Time to dig deep. Thank you for reaching out, and congratulations on your 100th episode. Stoked to be a part.
Peace. Wow. Peace. AC might be coming down to the shop in a couple weeks.
Ah. Yeah.
She might be coming down.
That was definitely a
new Patagonia gear for you, hopefully.
Excuse me. See, I wanted to bring me down some of those. You know, speaking of Ashley Childs, you know, she's gonna have a nice deal with Patagonia. Hmm. You know, Patagonia, the company, started out by Yves Chouinard. He was a blacksmith. He was making pitons for rock climbers and ice climbers.
Yeah.
So he had a little shop, and he had a little giant power hammer, and he was making climbing gear. So you want to talk about one of the most innovative American. I don't know if he's American, but I'm going to say he's American.
He is.
Blacksmiths in the 20th century is Yves Chouinard. I mean, being able to figure out how to make pitons and climbing gear was pretty intense.
He's got a really great interview he did with Guy Raz on How I Built This, about how he started his business.
I love that podcast. I've recently got into that. I love it.
It's a great podcast. That episode is very exceptional. I think it speaks a lot to kind of like he talks about his philosophy around Patagonia, and it really put words to how I feel about my knife making. But it's a really good one. So if you guys go check it out. But to get back to Ashley's question, what do you guys think? What is it about knife making that you love that keeps you going? What is it deep down?
I think for me, it's being able to firstly be my own boss, do my own thing, be creative in a way where I'm not attached to a screen all day. Because that was my sort of previous life where, I could be creative, but it was just always just sitting in front of a screen. So I just love the fact that I create something from real things, you know? So, you know, atoms instead of bytes, things that you can hold and use. And again, it goes back to that, you know, my love of cooking, which is why I wanted to be culinary knives. But I think it is that sort of freedom to do as I please, basically.
I like that.
Sounds pretty good.
It sounds good. Think, sounds good.
What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah.
No, it sounds great.
Yeah, no, I've always had kind of a creative bent. I used to do a lot of illustrating and drawing when I was younger. And then I got into woodworking in like middle school and high school. And I've just always loved working with my hand. And knife making has really been an awesome outlet for me to express kind of like that level of creativity, especially when it comes to like developing my patterns and stuff like for my Damascus. I think another part of it, big part of it, is the community. It's, you know, it's meeting all kinds of great people from all kinds of backgrounds. You know, it's people like you guys. It's like meeting Ashley Childs in at Blade Show in Portland. I mean, and Steve Schwarzer, and just all everybody that's become some of my closest friends are from this community, and I think that really drives me to keep doing this work and to keep growing this community of friends and being able to help people also at the same time. I think doing this knife making, you know, it's the first time I've ever had something that I've excelled at in such a way that what I do can actually be helpful to other people. I can provide actionable advice in a meaningful way that helps change the experience for others. So.
Well, that's a good answer too. God damn. You guys are very clear and have very good things to say. For me, when I was just doing sculpture, I loved making sculpture. I loved the physical aspects of it. But what I love about knife making is the discipline. For me, this has been about having an idea, designing it, and then using techniques and discipline to see it through. And for me, with my mind is all over the place all the time, this is kind of one of those things that's very, very disciplined. And same thing with blacksmithing and being able to kind of envision something and see it through to the end with discipline and technique and, you know, making little changes here and there makes me feel like I'm not human garbage.
That's it.
It makes me feel like, you know, I have control over the of some aspects of my life.
Sure.
And that allows me to feel more responsible.
Fair enough. Shall we go to some listener questions?
Yes.
Okay. You take it away, Jeff.
All right. Here we go. This comes from KLB.
Jeff. The phone's ringing.
Hello?
Hi, this is Fingal Ferguson. Hello to the three musketeers of the Knife Talk podcast. Congrats on hitting the milestone of 100 episodes. I love the podcast and I want to thank you for making Mondays great again. I hope you had a great Halloween. I'm sending the love from Ireland. Yeah, well, take care. Thank you. Bye.
Wow.
Fingal can take the shit this time for saying make Mondays great again, because I took some shit for putting up that hat.
As you should.
Yeah, maybe so. What a top guy Fingal is. I've got to say that this week, I said I've had some bad luck and so on. And a couple of weeks ago, I did this thing with Fingal where I sent him a few of my blades and some handle material so he could use that. And he wanted to finish them up. Anyway, this week, I arrived back to France to find a big parcel waiting for me. It was full of, so for those who don't know, Fingal owns a huge farm, a big family farm back in Southern Ireland called Gabin. And it's world famous for its produce. So it's cheeses, it's sort of charcuterie, that kind of stuff. And he sent me this big box and it was like half a dozen of his cheeses, different cheeses, smoked salamis, his cooking chorizos. But also this book called Gabin. Which I think his mother wrote, which is all about their farm and the history of the farm.
Huh.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book, but it also has a few of their recipes in there and their sort of farming practices. It's the most beautiful thing ever. And I just fell in love with this whole family reading this book. It's incredible. So if you get a chance, it's called Gabin, G-U-B-B-E-E-N, which is the name of the farm. But I'm pretty sure you'll probably be able to get the book on Amazon or so-and-so. It's amazing. It's amazing. And Fingal does this little bit about knives as well. It's just such a heartwarming, beautiful book.
And incredible.
I think a beautiful, beautiful man. So thank you so much, Fingal. It really cheered me up.
I'm going to get one today. I'm going to order when we get home.
Love it. Mm.
It's incredible.
What a good dude. Good dude.
How is his audio so much clearer than everybody else's? What kind of magic is he using?
He's Irish. He's Irish. You know what they're doing. The Irish know what they're doing.
Well, he's right on the Atlantic there, so he's probably got one of his own copper pipes for the internet going straight across under the Atlantic, I'd imagine. Fingal's own pipe. Who knows?
All right. Thank you, Fingal.
Shall we take some listener questions, Jeff?
I mean, you, okay, let's go. Hear this one.
No, I'm joking.
Oh, God damn it. KLB was never going to get his question asked. Holy all right, shit. Well, that was a good one. You had me there, God damn. All right, this one comes from KLB Gant. KLB. All right. Hey, you sexy beast, can I ask you a question? What do you think about the super glue finish on handles? It seems to work pretty well, but I figured I'd ask before I bought buckets of super glue. Thanks. Have you guys ever done that super glue coat?
I've done it on like hybrid scales and stuff where sometimes you get, you know, those little sort of voids and so on. But I've never done a complete coating. I don't know whether it would sort of go white over time. I don't know. But I've only used it for those little tiny sort of almost like little cracks and voids, really.
I saw Will Stelter doing it once and I don't. It scares the shit out of me. I've never done that. Have you, Mareko? You know about it?
I tried it once. I've known about it. It's a huge pain in the fucking ass to do. And
there you go.
Yeah. And to me, it is not worth it because ultimately it does deteriorate over time because it's glue. It's not a surface finish. It's glue. And it looks great and it probably looks great for a while, but not for the whole life of that thing. And there are, you know, as you were talking about before, trying to maybe move into using techniques that like lure makers use for handle finishing. You know, there are all kinds of great products out there that are designed to be surface coats, to be surface finishes. And they're designed to be handled and make things more impact resistant. But the problem with different kind of adhesives is that they kind of deteriorate when they're exposed to hand, like oils, especially hand oils, if not also food oils, because of the chef's knives. And so I would try to, if you're going to do finish coats, use something that's meant to be exposed to the repeated contact with hand oils or food oils or anything like that. And it also, it kind of like, it shrinks or, yeah, it reacts funny to light. So like Craig was saying, you know, depending on the super glue you're using, it could do some funky stuff to your handle. So I would avoid it. I've avoided it.
There you go.
So why do people use it? Is it because it just finishes so nicely and buffs up nicely for
well,
the shine?
Yeah, if you spend a week doing it, And basically, so the premise of it is that you build up coats. So you douse your handle material, whatever you're doing. Sometimes I've seen people do sheets and stuff like that in super glue. You douse it, you let it set up, and then you go back and sand it back to create a smooth finish. And then you go back and you add another and you add another and you keep doing that until you build up enough layers that it's all a consistent kind of thickness of finish and it's all smooth, but it takes forever and it's a huge pain in the ass and I don't even know if it's really worth it. So good luck to you. God bless you if you try it. I don't know.
I like super glue, but not for that.
Yeah.
I did learn a trick that I learned from watching Nick Wheeler where he was fixing a hole. Well, or like a little with wood, and
sure.
He actually used super glue and ground up of the same wood.
Yep,
and he kind of mixed it together like a slurry to create like a
paste, like a putty,
like a matching putty because you're using the same material. And I've done that before,
absolutely,
and that works pretty good.
Yeah, I've done that
but
too.
Other than that, I'm out.
That is a great fix. Yeah.
All right. Boom. Onward.
This next
Stark
one, sorry.
Knives.
Sorry. You want to take
on,
it? I'm sorry.
No, go on.
I was sleeping.
Yahoo!
Yahoo! This next one is from Stark Knives. I was listening to the last episode, and you mentioned doing serrations. I was curious, how thin do you grind a blade before adding serrations? Do you grind the edge down to the thinness you would normally do for a kitchen knife, or do you leave the edge thicker before adding them in? Thanks, and keep up the awesome work on the podcast. I enjoy every episode, Ben. Well, Ben, what do you guys say? You guys have been doing more of those than I have.
Well, I learned the serrations when you came into the shop and you showed me how you do them. And I've made some little changes based on what I have and stuff like that and what I do now. And now my offset serrated knife, I fucking love my offset serrated knife. And what I do is I grind to the finish as if it was going to be a regular knife that was going to sharpen.
Yeah. Mm.
And then when I put the serrations in, I put them in at an angle. I don't put them in directly like sawteeth. I put them in at an angle. You only need a little bit of serration. So you're creating these scallops. And I go super, super slow on the on a half inch contact wheel. And I space them all out. But I've gotten to the point now, and thanks to you, Marek, because the first time I ever did a serrated knife, I was drilling holes and using countersinks, and it was a whole production.
Sure.
This way is so much faster and so much easier, but I go down to right before I'm about to sharpen it, and you're going super slow, but you're making the serrations at an angle. You're not going straight, you know, directly on. You're trying to accentuate. You're making more sharp edges. You're not you're not just making saw teeth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like when I did it at your shop, I was shooting for probably around 30 degree angle or a 40 degree, something like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes that bread can be pretty tough and you want your blade material to be able to handle that, and by grinding at a kind of a more blunt angle than you would a chef's knife, that helps lend more of that kind of strength.
I think you're right about that.
To the geometry.
I'm going at a very, but if you're very thin, if your blade is very thin, you don't have to go in very far.
Right, right.
You're just looking for enough to create these kind of different edges. So when you're cutting, you know, it's all sharp. It's not just the teeth.
Right.
It's the inside, too. So
Absolutely.
You're creating edges on the inside. So, and you're only doing it on one side. So when you're done, what you should have is you should have burr on the side that you didn't cut the serrations on.
Sure.
So that's where all the burr is. And then you hand sand all that burr off. And then you have sharpened edges on, not just on the tips, but on the insides of the scallops.
Too. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much the same with me. So, yeah, I'll take it straight down as if it's a finished knife. So it's generally the shape is going to be almost like a carving knife. So it'll be finished off almost as a carving knife. But then, yeah, just add those scallops and you're away. Sounds easy, eh?
Just like that.
You got to do. Yeah. It's nice to, you know what I will say is I like to do, I usually do a couple practice runs.
Mm.
Like I'll have a couple pieces of steel that I'll mark. And like I do, what I do is I mark out, like if I have a half inch wheel, I think I'm making a half inch marks the whole way. And then I put my knife on the slowest setting because it's super thin. So I don't need to, you know, cut through. And I'm usually starting off with like 220 belt. I'm going super slow. And I usually practice on another piece of steel, especially if I haven't done it in a while.
Yeah.
So I'll get a piece of even you know, regular, some bullshit steel, and then I'll make my marks, and then I'll see how I feel, and I get a chair, and I do it real slow, and
no,
and it practice. I don't just like start, you know, running through the shop, you know, putting serrations on knives all red. I kind of get myself squared away. You like, it's like stretching.
And I'd say try and do it in one pass as well, so you get your rhythm. Because trying to get back in and get into the same sort of grooves that you previously made is a lot harder than just a normal beveled knife.
But it's good if you can drop down on your grits, then you get a thinner. I mean, I'm dropping down for 200 to 400 to 800. If it's going very slow, I usually don't have a big problem.
Sure.
And I'm being very, you know, I think I learned this from you, Marekko. If I'm sitting by the grinder with the wheel, I actually have my left hand against the side of the platen, against the whatever's holding the wheel.
Sure.
And then I'm just like balancing myself against myself. I'm like in a good position. It's almost like when you're welding, you want to be in a comfortable position. If you can find yourself in a good position where you're not like waving it around and you're very specific, it'll become much faster and easier.
Yeah, you're anchoring your hand
exactly.
on something stable. Yeah.
Thanks to you.
Okay, so we've got another one. Let's just do one more before we move on, because we've got a few different things to do today. So the next one is from J Lee _custom knives,
And he said, this celebrity chef wants me to not only make him a free knife, but also pay him $1,500 to use it as a competition. Oh, and pay to get a patch made for his jacket, like a race car driver would wear. So as a very small business owner, how can I most effectively tell this guy and the folks like him to fuck off?
Culture Living Good has some nerve. Culture, you have some nerve hitting this poor guy up for all that money, Culture. As an outrage. An outrage.
Seriously.
Fuck that guy. Fuck this guy.
Chef generally thinks that would happen. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
These guys have lost, some of these guys have lost their minds. There, I know plenty of celebrity chefs who say to me, I'm going to be on, you know, whatever Food Network show, and people are going to be buying this knife. If you let me have it, the answer is always they won't, because it's not like Food Network is going to put your name up with an address. These motherfuckers are scurrilous. They're scurrilous, and they're makes me so mad. How can you tell him without hurting his feelings? Here's what you do. You say, I have a message from Knife Talk Podcast. They wanted me to tell you to fuck off. It's infuriating. The whole I'm gonna sell knives for you because I have all this. It's garbage.
And you pay him too. You pay him too to do that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
God damn you, Jay Lee, Custom Knives. I want you to out this guy. No, don't out this guy. Don't out this guy. I'm sure I know him too. I know a couple of those motherfuckers that are just like, you know, if you give me this and you give me a little bit of money, maybe you'll fuck yourself.
Well, and what's crazy to think about, like, I could see a larger commercial manufacturer being able to be like, oh yeah, we have that in our marketing budget. They have marketing budgets. You know, he's reaching out to a small custom knife making guy. Like, anybody, like even Neil with his almost 500,000 followers, you know, he's still a one man show. And to ask somebody for a knife and then to ask them to pay on top of that is ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
When you're in your shop, you have to realize the meter is running.
Yeah.
The meter's running when you're in your shop. And if it works for you, usually when I'm doing a chef series knife, we'll give the chef a knife. When my friend Carl Ruiz, who passed away, he sold a pile of knives. If he needed a couple extra knives, I gave him a couple extra knives. No questions asked. And I mean, he sold a lot beforehand. And usually that's how, you know, when the meter's running, these guys, you know, you have to really make decisions in regards to what's going to work. I know that a lot of magazines do it. I know that a lot of people make these little, well, if you give me this, maybe you have to weigh your options. If a magazine says, give me a knife and I'll put you in a magazine, you might want to weigh the option. But if a guy wants you to wear his gut, you're not, this isn't like a bass pro, this isn't a bass fishing tournament where you're not selling motors, you know? And this guy should be, you know, kissing your ass for a knife, not telling you to kiss his ass. So,
yeah.
I have nothing to say other than scum. Guys, scurrilous scum.
Look, before we move on, I've just looked through our questions that we've got on our list here. There's another good one, so I just want to jump into that one as well. So it's from Kyle Heath, or Kyle Keith, as he calls himself on Instagram. When hiring help, do you have any interview questions that can help gauge a person's common sense or problem-solving abilities?
No.
That's a good question. I like that one.
I don't know. That's definitely for Jeff. You're the one that's been
hiring. I'll tell you what I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear, I really love knives. I got guys who come into the shop and say,
you got the job. You love knives. You got the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yo, I'm hiring a pencil sharpener. I need to sharpen pencils. Don't tell me. I get guys, I really love knives. I don't care. Yeah, I see this shop as a metal shop. Like, if I was doing railings, if I was doing anything other than knives, this is a metal shop. It's different. It's being like in a kitchen. You don't go into the chef and say, I love watching the Food Network. You know, I think it's very important to say, you know, the kind of people that you want to hire, they have to understand that it's not exciting all the time. There's a lot of stuff here. Like, you know, I'll get somebody to start in the beginning. A lot of times, hand sanding is the only thing I can get someone on that they can do without me worrying about something being fucked up or get fucked up. But it's one of those things that you need to be able to be someone to be able to be work hard, appreciate the concept of seeing a project through and being on time and not giving you some stories. That's mm-hmm. another thing. And this is a metal shop thing. The metal guys, oh, I can't come in. You need a little consistency and you need someone. I don't think that people need to have metal worker. I don't think people have to have knife makers in your shop as employees. I think you just need someone who has a little bit of, you know, interest in kind of like working hard. I've had chefs come in and like, I want to work for you. I want to be your, you know, they come in for a day and then all of a sudden you don't hear from them again. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's really important to find someone who's eager to learn and to understand that this isn't, you know, for everybody.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Shout out to Kyle Heath. He, when I made my watch caps, he did the Photoshop of my logo on the Jack Nicholson from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So thank you, Kyle. That was super cool.
We've had some really nice sort of memes made recently, whether it's about the show or Jeff's hats or whatever like that. They're good. Good fun. Mm-hmm. I like them. Yeah. So let's talk about another sponsor. So Texas Farrier Supply. They carry farrier goods. So if you're a farrier, you can get all your goods from them. But they also do a lot of great knife-making stuff. And they've got a knife-making section on their website now where they've got everything you need. Everything you need as a knife-maker to start or, you know, to further your career. Whatever it is, they've got it all.
But including epoxy dyes. Everyone asks me, where do you get epoxy dyes? They're carrying dyes for epoxy if you're doing firework and you want to color the epoxy.
Oh, there we go. There we go. They also do RhinoWet. And we're all big fans of RhinoWet, made by Indasa USA. But what you can do with Texas Fire Supply, you can get 10% off your order. So that's not just for their RhinoWet, but for anything that they do by using the promo code KnifeTalk10. So head on over to TexasFarrierSupply.com. Just have a look what they've got, because they've got some unusual stuff that you don't normally see at normal suppliers as well. So it's worth spending half an hour on their website just to see what they've got. And remember, use KnifeTalk10 for a 10% discount. So, are we ready for something a little bit different?
Yes.
Now, we've done these before, so it's time for another... It's another quiz. Now, these were fun last time. I enjoyed doing these. So this time, I'm just going to pit you two guys against each other. So do you have some sort of buzzer?
Yes.
Okay. What was that? Was that Jeff shitting himself there?
That was my gurgling stomach.
Okay, well, so this is... Mareko, you do yours again, sorry.
Okay. Let's see, I'll do this one. How's that?
Okay. Doorbell for Morocco. Okay, and what have you got, Jeff?
Some sort stun of gun. Stun gun.
Sounds like a vibrator.
It does. No,
no, it doesn't. Come on, man. I mean, not that I know. Jesus Christ.
It does not sound like a vibrator. All right.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it does. Oh, who knows? There you go. Let's
so
go.
I'm going to keep this simple. It's 10 questions.
Oh, 10.
First to buzz in with the correct answer gets a point. If you buzz in and give the wrong answer, you get a negative point. So you get a minus point.
Right.
So you both start on zero.
Jeopardy style.
Are we ready for the first question?
Go ahead.
Hello, Jeff and Mareko. It's your favorite stooge from Kentucky. Here's my question for you. What is the little dot called over the lowercase I and lowercase J?
I knew it. You know what I heard about it recently? No, I knew it when I used to know it, and now I forgot.
Mareko, anything there?
I have nothing.
God damn it.
You have nothing. Okay.
It's called a tittle, but don't try to put that into your iPhone because autocorrect will mess that up.
It's a tittle.
Nice.
Apparently.
All right. I
failed almost every English class I ever took.
All right. Well, that was a tough one. I mean, I thought I knew. I knew that an entero bang is a question mark and a exclamation point, but that's about it. That's all I know.
A tittle. So that was Jarrod from Boot Hill Blades, by the way.
Plus, Jarrod didn't know that either. He had to come up with that one. Let's just be honest. The Kentucky Stooge isn't the Kentucky Stooge it's for a reason. You didn't know that. You looked on the internet for that one. Go ahead.
So you're still not off the mark yet. 0-0. Next question.
Chickens. Two chickens.
Talking about chickens. The longest recorded flight of a chicken is within 2 seconds either way. Who's going to take a guess?
What do you mean within 2 seconds in either way?
The longest recorded flight of a chicken. I'll give you 2 seconds, like, either way.
What are these fucking questions? What kind of questions? How long did they fly, or how long in the air, or measurements?
Can you imagine this as a quiz on TV? Where you two, like, question and they...
So far, two terrible questions. How long?
The longest recorded flight of a chicken in seconds. And I'll give you 2 seconds either way.
I'm going to say 25 seconds.
Minus one for Jeff. Marekka, would you like to take an answer or not?
Sure. I'll try 2 minutes.
Oh, nowhere near. Nowhere near. Minus one for Marekka, too. It's 13.5 seconds. That's all.
These questions suck.
There we are. So we're both at negative one now. 0-0.
Yeah, no, we're
negative
five. One. God damn it. Come on, baby. Let's go.
Next question. Ready? Fastest fingers first. What are my kids called?
Molly.
Marco.
Molly.
Yes.
And Daisy.
Correct. That's a point.
Wow.
Marekka, you're on zero.
Uncle Jeff just shit the bed.
I almost shit the car. I was thinking so hard, I almost shit the car. My stomach's still gurgling.
So, minus one to Jeff, 0 to Marekka. We're on question number 4. Who was the first ever guest on Knife Talk?
Walter Sorrells.
Correct. Jeff was straight in there. So you're both on 0.
There we go.
It's getting close. Next question. Next question.
What's up, KTP? JSK and the motherfucking Hizzy.
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Hizzy means house, Jeff. That's what the kids say these days.
Googly-eyed
Here's my quiz question. As we all know, the hot forging of metals all began in the land of Mesopotamia. But what was the very first recorded metal forged in fire and employed by human hands?
I'm going to say copper.
Ooh, you're back to minus one.
Damn.
Would you like an answer, Jeff?
I'll say bronze.
I bet it was like tin or some stupid shit.
I know
like
the
that.
Last. Oh. I know the last piece of steel that was forged by modern man was done by fucking JSK. Josh Scott is the last guy to forge a piece of metal. That's for sure. So you googly eyed fuck. That's what you get.
Do you want the answer? Josh has got the answer for us. Here we go.
The answer: gold, bitches, gold.
Oh my god.
Gold.
He's such a goofball.
You're both on negative one.
He's such a goofball. Go ahead. Thanks, Josh.
Gold before copper. Huh?
Why did I say bronze? I'm so stupid. That's a stupid thing to say. All right, go ahead.
Question 7. Which malformation did Marilyn Monroe have when she was born?
She had a tail.
No, that's minus two.
I mean, what not? I thought it was those little tails.
I have no idea.
No,
I got
a tailbone, I think, but no. Would you like a guess, Marekka?
No.
Okay, you're.
I'll try to safely stay at my negative one.
No, you're smart. No, he's smart. He's smart. He's doing it right. He's playing it right. What's the answer?
Six toes. He had six toes on the left foot, apparently.
That was going to be my guess. Extra toe.
Yeah. It was?
Yeah.
Gross.
Some sort of lizard foot. Jeez.
Yeah. There you go.
Number 8. How many time zones are there in the world?
Oh, Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
It's quite logical when you work it out.
Oh, is it logical?
Oh, is there
chicken,
20?
Chicken
flight? Is there 24?
That's minus point for Marekka because he didn't buzz in.
I'm staying away from this one, man. I can barely tell you how many the time zones are on this goddamn. I don't know what time zones we're all on it now. So how would I be able to tell how many time zones are on the world?
We are on 3 different time zones now. Marekka was right, but he didn't buzz in, unfortunately.
Oh, wait, gotta give it to him. He got it right.
Really? Do you think?
Yes, okay. Of course you give it to him. He got it right. He didn't buzz in. He took a guess. Give it to him.
You're on zero.
There you go.
Okay.
Number nine. This is still to play for, Jeff. If you get these two, you can still draw on the last two questions.
All right.
You both know the answer to this, so this really is quickest
fingers first. That's what we think.
What is the largest city in...
Oh, Jesus Christmas.
Canada.
Are you crazy? These questions...
Did you two go to school or not? Jesus.
I mean, seriously.
We're very U.S. centric in the United States.
I mean,
okay, I'll take a guess. Quebec.
No.
All right, I'm going to take a guess too.
Okay.
I'm going to say Vancouver.
No.
All right, well, there you go.
Toronto.
All right, boom. There you go.
Toronto.
Sorry, Canada.
We got one question left. At the moment, Jeff is on -3 and Mariah is on -1.
So fucking good.
You need a miracle,
Jeff. That's the way
we
do these quizzes, goddamn you. That's the way we do them.
You ready for the last question?
Of course.
Hey, fellas. Steve Pellegrino here. A hearty congratulations on 100 episodes. As we say here in Philly, I got a question for yous. What is the dot over a lowercase letter I called?
What
Cheers
the
to 100
fuck?
More.
He's going to do the same thing as Jared said?
And
he said a tittle. Is
well
it a tittle?
Well done. Well done.
Jesus Christ. These questions, man. Holy mackerel.
Do you know the weirdest thing? So I sent a bunch of people, just said, could you set a question up for the quiz? Within 5 minutes, both Jared and Steve come back with the same question.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. They must have just got straight on Google and asked for quiz questions.
Yeah, straight on. That's right. That's right. Because neither one of them knew the answer. That's what I'm going for. I'm neither one of them with peace and love. Neither one of you do that shit.
There you go. So a tittle. We learned something
or
new
Or they just
day.
Wanted to say tittle. They just wanted to say tittle.
Probably.
That's the only other thing I can
probably,
think of.
Probably, yeah.
Wait, so does that mean I finally took one?
You've taken one.
Congratulations. Now,
this is nothing to be proud of, either of you. So the winner with -1 point
yes!
is Mareko.
Yeah, baby!
-2 for Jeff. Woo-hoo!
I think that's, you know what? Congratulations. Hearty congratulations to you. Some of these questions, man. Holy mackerel.
Do you think we need to bring the quiz back each week?
I love the quiz.
It gets difficult getting questions. But anyway, that was this week's quiz.
Hey, you know what you should do?
This is the part of the episode where we get all well, what is it? I think it's a mix of tips and maybe some gripes about people giving bad advice. But I guess we'll see as we read through these. I'll kick it off here with Dave Irving, Evader Knives. He says, rubbing alcohol works great for cleaning up epoxy. I use acetone too, but for hands and everything, 90% of... for hands and everything, 90% rubbing alcohol also cleans off layout ink.
I've got a tip here. We should delete the ones we've already done, because we've already done these two tips.
Oh, is it?
We?
I think so.
No, we haven't done these.
Really?
No, okay. I don't think we've done these.
Okay.
But I'd like to add a tip that I figured out. I finished these 50 Bandito knives.
Congratulations.
It was a big deal. I'm psyched about it, but I tell you what I learned, and this was based off of, I have a problem sometimes. I hate on when I'm using J-Flex belts. You know, the J-Flex belts are the ones that are very, very thin. They're thin, you know,
thin
usually like the
tape,
thinner,
yeah.
thin backing tape. And then sometimes if I'm using a, on a platen, the tape will make you chatter a little bit. It'll make you jump. It'll make whatever you're holding jump up a little bit and you get chattering.
Yeah.
So what I did was I took a piece of green Scotch-Brite, not a belt, but green Scotch-Brite that you get in like the cleaning aisle. And then I used painter's tape and I put a strip of, I taped a piece of Scotch-Brite onto the platen And it stopped the chattering, but then it also, because I had all this, you know, like this backing that just like give, a little bit of give, I created a kind of a fake, and this isn't new. I didn't create this like I'm a genius or anything like that, but it was like, it helped me actually when I was sanding all the handles, and it kind of gave the same effect as a rotary platen.
Yeah.
Because it allowed the J-Flex belts, which have a lot of give, you know, your bigger weight belts are not going to have a lot of give on the rounding, but I was able to do it 100 times faster to the point where all my handles for all the Banditos, I didn't have to hand sand the handles at all. Like I used a slack belt from the underside,
nice.
And then I used this padded platen. It changed the way I'm going to be doing the handles, and it cut down a pile of time. So if you can just tape on a little bit of Scotch-Brite with the blue painter's tape, and then you run your belts very slow with the 400 grit or 200 grit or 400 grit or 800 grit, you will be able to take out all your marks, and you won't get any chattering, and you won't get any hard facets for the most part.
Sure.
Because it'll contour a little bit. Great.
Nice.
That was huge. That was huge. Saved me a pile of time. Pile of time.
Tip of the week. Shall we answer Dave's question then? Because I thought that we already answered it, but maybe not. So he said rubbing alcohol. Sorry, it's not a question. It's a tip, isn't it?
It's not a question.
Rubbing alcohol works great for cleaning up epoxy. We did talk about this because you mentioned about Toma using WD-40.
Oh, well, then my bad.
Yeah.
Well, give it again. There you go. Sorry about that.
So we got another one. Hopefully we haven't done this one before, by CB_custom_knives. I've got a tip for you guys. When doing your dry fit before glue up, rub some wax on the blade and transition section of the scales to keep them from having epoxy stick to the areas that are almost impossible to clean up afterwards.
Yep.
And he says, be sure not to get any under the scales.
For sure. I actually did that on this Smith & Bard small batch. I made sure the blades were waxed and kind of the transition area was clear and had some wax on it. And afterwards, clean up, it was a mess. But because that wax was on there, the glue or the epoxy hardened, but it didn't adhere to the surface. And it just flaked right off. Yeah.
So
you do it on the, would you do it on the bolster too? Put the wax on the bolster too?
Yeah, so you
of the scales?
Yeah, at the front. And like he said though, you want to be careful not to get it on the underside of the scale, because obviously then that's a portion that won't get glued up. But if you can either mask it off or kind of wax the top of the bolster and then wipe off the bottom side of the scale, or even just like a little hand sanding again, that will take off any wax and make it clean. But it just peeled right off the front, just flaked right off the front of the bolster and off the blade. Yeah, it was a huge mess. I had some people ask me like, how are you going to clean that up? And it just came right off. So that's how I cleaned it up.
That's when you get the messages. I used to get messages. I do that too. I let that shit go all over the place. And that some guy said to me, you're using too much epoxy. Don't use so much epoxy. I had to say, hey, man, don't worry about me. You worry about you.
Yeah.
We'll get it sorted.
That was a good tip. Real good tip.
Community Showcase.
All right. This is where we give a little bit of love to somebody out there who we think that is important, that you should be following, was inspirational. It doesn't really matter. Somebody who is a good follow on Instagram. That's what we do, the Community Showcase. Craig, what do you got, my buddy?
I'm going to flip this one because, you know, this is our 100th episode. So I thought it'd be a good time to reintroduce ourselves a bit. So, I mean, over the 100 episodes, we've had, you know, we have close to sort of 50,000 listeners per episode now. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of these haven't listened, you know, from episode one, and they, you know, they weren't here when we introduced you guys when you joined the show and that kind of thing. So it's a good time to just introduce ourselves again. So the three of us will do it. We'll give our own little pitch, I suppose. So I'll start with myself. It's Craig Lockwood. I'm of Chop Knives. I'm a Brit, but I now live in France, where I make mainly stock removal, well, only stock removal blades, all culinary blades.
And I sort of started sort of specializing a bit, really, of doing sort of table knives for restaurants. That's been the sort of my main trade over the past sort of 6 months. But been making knives for sort of 4, 5, maybe even 6 years now. And that's me. So I'm Chop Knives on Instagram. Don't go following my personal account because it's just rubbish. There's nothing there. Go follow Chop Knives, and it'd be good to meet you digitally. Jeffrey, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Jeff Fader, and nobody cares.
Jesus Christ.
Fader Knives. I'm on the show. I'm on my company's name is Fader Knives. I'm in Hudson Valley, New York, and I'm trying to make it happen. That's it. What else do you want me to say?
There's actually an episode where I introduce Jeff. So there's a lot, you know.
Can I tell you that when you, you know, the way I met you was because Jesse Savage had sent me your podcast. You should listen to the podcast. And I listened to, it was you and Walter Sorrells and Alex Steele. And I sent you a message saying, I really liked your podcast. And you immediately said, hey, you want to be on the podcast? And I made the concerted effort because I'd been on a pod. I used to do a podcast with my buddy Nico years ago. I made this concerted effort when I go on other people's podcasts that I'm either going to try to get myself kicked off or I'm going to get invited back. And there's a very fine line between being invited back and be kicked off. And I would totally add this real issue. Like, you got to say something crazy because otherwise they're either going to kick you off or they're going to bring you back. And, you know, so
brought you back.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I've been kicked off a few podcasts. I've been definitely asked not to come back from the podcast.
Oh, right. Not mid-podcast. They haven't just put the phone down on you.
I kind of wish they had. It would have been so much more interesting. But there have been a couple flea bags I've been on that I have not been asked back. That's for sure.
Mareko, tell the world about yourself.
My name is Mareko Malmasi. I make knives. I like knives. I like cooking knives.
You got the job.
No, I'm a custom knife maker based out of Olympia, Washington. I've been making knives for going on 10 years now. I specialize in culinary knives, forged integral, Damascus, chef's knives, and I like long walks on the beach and warm eggnog.
Warm eggnog. Warm fucking eggnog. Warm eggnog?
How's that ass bubbling of yours now, Jeff?
Oh, jeez. My God. I'm literally about to shit my pants. Warm fucking eggnog? Oh, my God. Anything else? Some curdled milk afterwards? Jesus Christ.
No. No cement mixer shots for me.
Boy.
Right then. Mareko, who have you got for your community showcase?
Okay, my community showcase is the fellas over at Bloodroot Blades. I can't remember if I've done them before or not, but they definitely don't need the help. They've been featured in a lot of places. They're super talented guys, but I just want to give them a shout out as they are not necessarily very active on Instagram and social media, but they're very good guys. They're super talented. I've admired their work since before I actually started Malmasi Fire Arts. They do a lot of work with repurposed material, reclaimed materials, like 100% reclaim. And they're just really nice guys. I first met them at Blade Show a few years back. But the reason I really want to give them a shout out is because they were very helpful with doing this whole sale that I just did with the Smith & Bard knives. And the way we did it was a lottery style, which is how they do their things. And it was very helpful to talk to them. And if you don't know them, go check them out. They're super talented. They have really nice aesthetic. They do really great work, and they're great guys. And I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing them in Atlanta this next year at Blade.
Cool.
All right. I'd like to give a shout out to a good buddy of mine I've known for a long time. His name is Darren Fisher. It's Darren.Fisher. Fisher. He actually was from the old guard at CMA with me, and he's a jeweler. He's a blacksmith. He's also a sculptor, and he's an incredible bronze caster. He does castings and stuff like that. He's incredibly talented metal worker, but he's also what was referred to as a whitesmith. Have you ever heard of a whitesmith?
No.
Those are the guys who deal with like precious metals. Like, this guy is like a legit serious metal guy, and he's a super smart guy, a lot of fun. a few years ago, I may or may not have been involved in almost killing him. If you want to hear the quick story real quick,
it's how I learned
how to vent my shop properly. We had him in a shop. We were teaching a class and it was freezing cold. We didn't have any heat on. So we lit a couple forges. It wasn't well ventilated. We start to eat the oxygen out of the room. And he went to take a leak. When he came back in, he said when he walked into the room, he said it was like hit with like a invisible wall of atmosphere and started throwing up. So he's fine. And we extended our sincerest apologies and we're all good now. And we don't know if he has any lasting brain damage or effect, but you know, I'm under the impression that everything's okay. And I'm hoping that this community showcase is going to make sure that any pending lawsuits don't happen. So I just want you to follow Darren. He's an awesome guy. All jokes aside, he's a super good guy. And when I start to do classes this coming year, he's definitely going to be teaching one and he's definitely worth a follow. He's a super, super good dude.
Nice.
Darren.Fisher.
Cool. Again, all these will be in the show notes on the website. And remember, on the website, you've got the forum, you've got our supplies list. There's a bunch of stuff on there. So go check out knifetalk.net. Okay, we've got a new jingle.
We got beef.
That is good.
Genuine cows there. Let's do it again.
We got beef.
Who is that?
That's Ben Snur.
Yeah. So one of the listeners.
That is a rootin' tootin' cowboy. That motherfucker is a legit rootin' tootin' cowboy.
Only the best for this show.
He's actually teaching a class down at Doghouse Forge. I think he's going to be doing a hammer making class.
Oh, nice.
So if you're looking, I think there's a few slots left.
He makes some nice hammers.
So you go to Doghouse Forge. He makes nice hammers, real nice hammers. If you go to Doghouse Forge, there's some classes going on there, and I might be in a class too, but I know that there's a couple slots left for this hammer-making class over at Doghouse with Ben Snur. It's definitely worth it. So,
cool.
There we go.
Well, this is the part of the episode where we kind of vent our frustrations, air our grievances, and I think Craig's got one for us to kick us off.
Yeah, it's people who say... that's hilarious, and they don't laugh. In the middle of a conversation, they go, that's hilarious, and they'll carry on talking. Oh. And it seems to be Americans. I don't know if it's Americans only, but I'm hearing it in a lot of podcasts at the moment. So I listen to a lot of podcasts here in the shop, and it's just becoming more and more common, and it just really grinds me. It's like in the middle of a conversation, just going, ha, LOL, and carrying on talking.
Oh, my God.
if it's hilarious, you laugh. You don't just say, hilarious. Well, it's weird. It's super weird. So, people who say that's hilarious, that's weird. That's super weird. So
I've definitely done that.
Yeah.
But I think you're trying... I mean, that's hilarious. I mean, I got a lot... I mean, you know, hilarious. I've definitely done that.
Well, you're part of the problem.
Clearly. Clearly, you're absolutely right. I accept my responsibility. I will stop saying hilarious and I'll just laugh.
LOL.
Maniacally. I will admit
No, you're not wrong.
I've said that's hilarious, but I also sometimes say that's really funny. But because I don't laugh and I say it very straight-faced, a lot of people think that I'm just being an asshole and giving them a hard time, but I actually do think what they're saying is funny, but all for whatever reason I just say that's really funny and that's funny.
Hilarious, you know.
Would you prefer nothing? If you say something that's and you get nothing, you get like, you know, what do you want?
Well, just don't say that's hilarious if you don't find it hilarious.
It's weird.
It's weird.
There you go.
Chortle.
Don't say it. What have you got? Any beefs?
Beefs. Yeah, so...
We got beef.
Beef.
It's been a real star-studded episode on this episode. Real star-studded.
Yeah. Star-studded.
That's why my computer broke last time. It fried because I had all these lined up.
Yeah, so when I ran that sale, it was really interesting to see people's responses to it. Like, and freaking 99.9% of it was positive, but there was definitely some people. I had a couple people trolling. There was one guy that was trolling me. He was bugging the shit out of me. I just had to ignore him. But I had one person that was very annoying. And essentially, they asked on the post, you know, why?
Careful, he might be listening.
I don't give a fuck.
Get careful.
He basically,
I get messages. I can't say shit anymore.
Yeah, he basically asked me to explain why I made the chef's knives the way I did. Why the profile, why, you know, how do I sharpen them and all that. I'm just like, I don't know. I was indignant, but at the same time, I was like, well, you know, maybe somebody just doesn't know. But then I looked through his Instagram. He claims himself to be, you know, a knife aficionado and all this kind of stuff, and knows a lot of shit about knives and is a chef. And after seeing that, I was like, you know what? Actually, I don't need to explain myself to you. You either like it and you get it, or you don't, and you can get the fuck out of here. So
yeah,
bye. And I ignored him. Yeah,
it's a guy that is totally it's not for you.
Yeah,
it's not for you. It's those are the people who, when they ask you a million questions and all, I try to, they're still the ones that are not going to buy anyway. They're just trying to pass the time.
Yeah.
That's
it's infuriating.
Well, and just the mindset.
You fucker. You son of a bitch, you got him. You got him.
Well, and I think what also annoyed me the most is just people in general with that kind of mindset of that they think so highly of themselves that they think that you should explain yourself to them. And I'm just like, who the fuck do you think you are? Get the fuck out of here.
So. People don't care. Yeah. People don't care. I'm still, to this day, I'm getting the, you know what you should do? You should make knives for car OEs. You know what you should do? You should sell this. You know what you should do? You should auction this. You know what you should do? Just look and then go. I wish you could see me right now. I'm my fingers pinch and I'm doing that Italian like spicy meatball thing. I'm shaking my fist at the microphone saying, you know what you should do? You know, fuck away off.
Joe Pesci style.
Yeah, totally. I'm literally like a spicy meatball, my fingers in a pinch, and I'm making like the just shaking it.
Cue the memes. Cue the memes. They're coming.
Jesus Christ.
What's your beef then, Jeff?
Well, while we were off for 2 weeks, I felt guilty, so I haven't been doing a lot of live feeds only because I just like it's enough with the content. It's like I gotta like focus. So when I've been getting it towards the end of the days, I do live feed, and for some reason Bob Ross started coming up very often, and I just wanted to make a point about Bob Ross. Now, when I was a kid, very young, I used to like watching what my father referred to as Saturday morning cartoonies. So I'd wake up really early, and there was nothing on, and then I'd have to, you know, about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd turn on the TV, and there on, you know, public access or public radio or public, you know what I'm talking about, was Bob Ross. He had a big afro and a big bushy beard, and he stood there with a palette in his hand, and he had a black background with a paintbrush, and he was quietly telling you how to paint. And he was saying, you take this pen, and you do a little bit of paint here, and then make tiny little leaves, a happy little tree goes here. And he was, and I was watching him, and I was just like, yeah, he's talking nicely, blah, 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 showing you how to paint. And then one morning, my father, who was an established painter, my father was a very, very good painter, he came in and wondering what I was doing, and he came in and he goes, what are you watching? He sat down with me, and he looks at this motherfucker, and he goes, don't watch this stuff. This is going to ruin you as an artist. And what happened was, is I started to realize later in life, and when I was going to art school and going to painting school or school to do a class for painting, and I was learning how to do art, what Bob Ross did, Bob Ross is the patient zero of these bullshit how-to YouTube channels. Because what he did is he taught people how to do gimmicks. He taught people how to buy a special type of paint, and he taught a special type of brush, and then you add a little bit of the blue and a little bit of yellow, and then you make this flickering sound, and then there you have a pine bough. He destroyed the concept of how to become an artist, and he created this vacuum, and he started teaching people how to make these bullshit pizzeria paintings. And it got to the point where he's being celebrated recently, and I know he was a nice guy, and he served in Vietnam, and he liked squirrels, and he was very pleasant, and I'm with you. He's not a bad guy. He was a good dude. But he kind of stripped back, and he destroyed the mindset of what being an artist is. It's transcending the technique to creating something that speaks. It's not about using gimmicks to get through what you're trying to get through. But for some reason, people have been mentioning Bob Ross to me, and he was a good dude. Good dude, did a lot of stuff, blah, 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 died penniless, I'm sorry.
Do you not think he turned a lot of young people into painting and into art?
I think he did not, because I think what he did was, he showed people how to, maybe he did, but what he did was he created these gimmicks that allowed you to fake being an artist is. So like if you have a special brush just for pine boughs, you're not understanding how paint really works. You're just, you know, you're learning these dumb gimmicks and then you're stringing all the gimmicks together and then all of a sudden you're an artist. It's just like, I feel like he, and it's the same reason why these people who go to these, there are these parties where you all make everyone stands in front of an acrylic canvas and they make a sunset with a beach scene and a margarita glass. And it all looks like garbage. And look, if you're having a good time, that's one thing. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like he set the tone for not really showing people how to become the artist that they want to be. There you go.
I get you.
It's not really a beef. It's not really a beef. God bless him. But it was like, for some reason, it came up a lot. And I was just like, you know what? This guy fucking crippled the artistic, you know, fortitude, the inner fortitude of modern man. There you go.
There we go. Time for one last section.
Hey, cuties.
Oh, Jesus.
What's the best thing you've had in your mouth this week?
What do we think? Best thing wasn't we've eaten this. I need to give this some thought myself.
Wasn't that goddamn soup, that's for sure. Jesus Christ. I feel like a water balloon that you haven't tied the knot. I'm like clenching like you wouldn't believe.
Oh my God.
Jesus. Miracle, what's the best thing you've eaten this week?
Jesus. All right. Well, I mean, it's the holiday season and so and it's colder. So I got a couple things. You know, people are starting to do a lot more baking. And a friend brought some cookies by the other day. And they're just like very simple. They're almost like a shortbread cookie, but they had like cranberries in them. And it was very nice. It was a good cookie. And then before that, though, my wife does a lot of soups. And especially because it's getting colder. She made this Moroccan, I can't remember what she called it, some sort of Moroccan soup. It's like a carrot soup of some sort. And it's got all kinds of spices and cayenne and stuff. And it's not only warm, but it's warming and it's super delicious. Mm. And we just ate that with some like crusty sourdough with butter on it and ugh, it's so good. I mean, what I don't know what else you can ask for from a soup other than it's delicious and for some beautiful crusty buttered bread.
Buttered, salty butter.
Yes.
How's your ass holding up there, Jeff?
Hey, how do you know? What do you mean? I'm all right. I mean, I didn't run off. I'm like up to my back teeth though. But other than that, I'm fine.
I'm going to go with some of Fingal's cheese, actually. So it was a bunch of cheeses that he sent over.
I'm surprised you said cheese. I thought you were going to go with something else.
I was going to go with Fingal's sausage was the best thing I've had in my mouth this week, but it would be a lie. It'd be his cheese. A really, really smoky cheese. And I really like smoky stuff, but sometimes, you know, smoky, it can be a bit acrid and sometimes be a bit bitter and it's not very nice. But this cheese, which I think it's like Gubbin smoked, it said on the label, just beautiful, beautiful. And I had a big old slice with a big glass of wine in front of the fire. It was lovely. So yeah, Fingal's smoked cheese, very, very
good. Is that a sheep cheese or goat cheese or what's the milk? Is it cow cheese? Cow's milk?
Is it? Maybe
I think it's cow's milk. Yeah, I think it's cow's milk.
Is it Fromunda? You know about Fromunda cheese?
Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
No?
No.
By the way, I got a message from a new listener, a very high-level listener, Will Morrison, one of the best knife makers in the world out of Australia, listens to the podcast, and he said to me, more dick jokes. So, right, gotta give the guy what he wants.
There's a challenge for next week. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, you gotta be Will Morris. You want more dick jokes and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
There you go. What have you got then, Jeff? Best thing in your mouth.
I had a fucking good apple. I had a good
apple.
I'm telling you, it was a fucking good apple, man.
It was a very good apple.
It was a real good. It was one of them science apples. It was a honey crisp apple. Mm. God damn, that fucker was good. It was crispy and it was juicy. It was a good ass apple. That's the only thing I can think of as a good apple, because it's not that fucking Thai goddamn hot beef soup, because I swear to God, I am going to obliterate my pants in a minute. But other than that, the apple was fantastic. A honey crisp apple, probably a science apple. I don't care. I liked it. I liked everything about it.
The honey crisp apple. The answer.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
The answer. Gold, bitches.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry. Sorry. That's Josh jumping in.
Googly-eyed fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, well, we've had cheese, we've had soup, and we've had an apple. Wow.
Damn right. Good apple, man.
Ain't that exciting?
Good ass apple. Good ass apple. Happy 100, baby. Good ass apple.
So that's it for the week. That's our 100th episode all done. Nice.
May I make one request now that we're still on the air before the new year or whatever? Yeah. Can we revisit the all beef review? Is it possible we could do an all beef review
all
episode?
All beefs. Why not? Well, we've got Christmas coming up. Why not do a Christmas or a Thanksgiving all beef special?
So that what that means, guys, is you we read off your beefs. We did a whole episode last year where we read off all your beefs. It was the whole episode. It was the all beef review. It was hilarious. So if you want to send in your DMs, DM us your all beef. You can write in the subject or write in the front all beef for the all beef review, and we'll start to collect them. All beef review. Want to leave all beef review on the hotline? Get ready. All beef review.
Are we also still taking audio DMs as well? Because the sound quality through those usually seems to come through pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, on Instagram, you can send us an audio DM or you can leave a message on our hotline. We're everywhere. We're everywhere at the moment.
Life Talk Festivus.
Yeah. So that's, that's episode 100. We're done. Jeff, look after yourself. Yeah.
Keep your butthole tight.
Okay.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.